What I'd like to do is review what we discussed in our last lesson. So lesson one, the introduction for our series on the theory of creation. We have three review questions on your handout. Number one, why is it that people can look at the same set of data and come to a different conclusion? Why is it that you can have the same people look at scientific observations and say, look, there's a creator. And you have another group of people who can look at the same set of observations and say, look, there's evolution, no such thing as a God. We talked about this last time. What is the reason for that? Anybody? Andrew? Okay. People have different worldviews. We have different preconceptions. We come from different perspectives. People have different worldviews. All right. In a Christian's worldview, what is our foundational preconception as a Christian? What is our foundational preconception? Okay. That the Bible is true. And the reason that we know that God is real is because the Bible tells us. Everything we have is related to the Bible. The Bible is true. That is our preconception. That is how we approach the world. We say that the Bible is true. Okay? What impact does a person's view of the Bible have on his or her view of God, his or her view of origins, or his or her everyday life? And that's not a question I want you guys to answer out loud right now, because we are going to be continuing to ask this question as we move forward. Okay? But I want you to be thinking about this. All right? That your view of the Bible has an impact on your view of God, on your view of origins, and on your view of everyday life. All right? So let's get into today's lesson. In 1983, Flight 143 Air Canada took off from Montreal to Edmonton. How many of you guys have ever heard of the Gimli glider? Anybody ever hear of this? I'd never heard of it either. The crew reached a height or an altitude of 41,000 feet, and they were just chugging along. This was a routine flight when all of a sudden their instrumentation panel pops up and something starts blaring, saying that they have a fuel problem, that they're running out of fuel. They looked at their calculations and they said, we have plenty of fuel. There must be something wrong with either the pump or with the sensor. So they turned off the sensor, just like any good man would do, right? Turn off the sensor and keep flying. A few minutes later, the sensor goes off again and saying that the other tank is almost out of gas. And they're looking at their calculations. They're saying, this is ridiculous. And then all of a sudden, the left motor, or the left engine, the left turbine goes out. And they say, oh no, we're in trouble. And so they quickly go down. Right, they start going down to lose altitude, and they start looking for a place where they can land. And one of the guys used to be in the Air Force, the Canadian Air Force, and says, there's a abandoned airfield, and I think we can reach that because there's no way that we're going to reach Edmonton. And so they start to go down, and all of a sudden, the right engine goes out. And they have no power. The instruments go out. They can't lower the landing gear. They have no power because everything's coming off the engines. And what was interesting was that as soon as the right engine went out, they started hearing this alarm, and they both go, what is that? And it's the alarm when you're completely out of gas. You're never, ever supposed to be completely out of gas. So then it was never even in the simulators. They didn't know what the noise was. And so they're going down, and they're using a technique that allows gravity somehow to pop the landing gear out, and the back landing gear is able to come out, but the front landing gear is not coming out. And they're coming in hot and heavy to this abandoned airfield. Okay? And miraculously, they landed the plane. They landed the plane nose down. And if you can see, that line in front of the plane is a guardrail. They landed on the guardrail to slow them. They were coming in, so they were going to go right off the edge of the right off the end of the runway. And providentially, they hit the. They were able to. Somebody put in a guardrail, and they were able to slow down. Nobody lost their lives. And you can see here that people came down the back of the plane, came down the front of the plane, and it's just a miracle. They tried this in simulations many times after that, and nobody survived. Everybody brought the plane down, and it was just a miracle that the pilot was able to bring this down, glide one of these things down. Say, Elias, what happened? It was a fuel problem, okay? And what they finally figured out, okay, was when they went to refuel this plane, that Canada was in the middle of changing from gallons and pounds to liters and kilograms. And nobody realized what was going on. And what they did was they only filled up half the tank, thinking that they were completely full. And they did not have nearly enough fuel to get from where they wanted to be to where they were going. They had incorrect assumptions on what they were doing. I didn't tell you this, but the plane, that abandoned runway, nobody realized that at the end of the runway, they converted it into a racetrack. And as the plane was coming in, there are people, there's no engines, so you can't hear anything. And there's kids. The pilot said there were two boys standing on the end of the runway who didn't know that they were barreling down at them. They turned around. They saw the plane coming. He said, I'll never forget the look on their faces as they see a plane coming right over their heads. And they stopped, you can see, just short of killing dozens and dozens of people because somebody made an incorrect assumption. I want to talk to you guys today about incorrect assumptions, okay? We have a lot of reading, and I beg your patience, and please follow along as best you can. But we're in Genesis chapter 1, and we're going to read Genesis chapter 1 and then answer a few questions from this, okay? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning one day. Then God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. Then God said, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth, bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them, and it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind, and God saw that it was good. There was evening, and there was morning, a third day. And I didn't realize what time it is, so I'm just going to cut it short there, okay? You guys, I'm guessing, know the story, all right? So question for you. According to Genesis 1, how did the universe come into being? And we are short on time, so I'm just going to ask you guys to please be forthcoming with your answers here. According to Genesis 1, how did the universe come into being? God made it, okay? God created the universe out of nothing. According to Lauren, you can have this one. According to Genesis 1, how did God create the earth? He spoke it into existence. But what did he do specifically? What's the rest of Genesis 1? He said, let there be light, right? And then firmament or atmosphere, dry land and vegetation, sun, moon and stars, sea creatures and birds, land animals, man. He did this in 6 days, according to Genesis 1, right? You come to no other conclusion reading this passage than that God created the universe out of nothing. He spoke it. That he created the earth in 6 days. You say, Elias, where does it say 6 days? How do you know it was days? According to this passage, over and over it says there was evening and there was morning, a third day, a second day, a fourth day. So according to this passage, and I understand there's different views on what a day is. Okay, that's not my point today. What I'm saying is, what does the passage say? Okay? That God created it, that it did not evolve, that it took 6 days. You guys with me? That's what the passage is saying. All right. Literally, in the beginning, there was nothing. God spoke it, and all of a sudden there was something. He created planets, sun, moon, and stars. He created the earth, and we live on it. Okay? That's what this passage is saying. What about evolution? I took this off of the National Geographic website, and I put the URL on your handouts, and the URL's up here. And we'll read through this. This is a little bit long as well. Again, I beg your patience. The most popular theory of our universe's origin centers on a cosmic cataclysm unmatched in all of history, the Big Bang. This theory was born of the observation that other galaxies are moving away from our own at great speed in all directions as if they had all been propelled by an ancient explosive force. Before the Big Bang, scientists believe the entire vastness of the observable universe, including all of its matter and radiation, was compressed into a hot, dense mass just a few millimeters across. So let me stop there for a second, make sure you guys understand this. What you see today, okay, what all the galaxies, all the universe, what they're saying is, what they believe is that it was in a little piece of mass this big, just a few millimeters across. Okay, and that it exploded, boom, and it created everything that we have today. Okay, this nearly incomprehensible state, this little piece of mass, is theorized to have existed for just a fraction of the first second of time. In other words, Big Bang proponents suggest that some 20 or 10 to 20 billion years ago, a massive blast allowed all the universe's known matter and energy, even space and time themselves, to spring from some ancient and unknown type of energy. The theory maintains that in the instant, a trillion trillionth of a second after the Big Bang, the universe expanded with incomprehensible speed from its pebble-sized origin to astronomical scope. Expansion has apparently continued, but much more slowly over the ensuing billions of years. Scientists can't be sure exactly how the universe evolved after the Big Bang. Many believe that as time passed and matter cooled, more diverse kinds of atoms began to form, and they eventually condensed into the stars and galaxies of our present universe. What does this mean? Let me show you a picture. Okay? And let's get to the picture first, and we'll come back to where we were. In the beginning, there was nothing except this little piece of matter. And in an instant, there's an explosion. Okay? And then it expands in a trillion trillionth of a second. And everything that you see today... I shouldn't say everything that you see today, but there's a universe in a trillion trillionth of a second, okay? And that we have this created, shouldn't say created, formed, all right, from this little piece of matter or mass, and that it cools down and we have an Earth, okay? That's what that's saying, okay? So let's get back to our questions. I just want to be sure we're going to ask the questions that I just did. To answer what I just said. But I want you to make sure that you guys understand what we're talking about here. According to this article, how did the universe come into being? Okay, with the explanation that I just gave, I hope that makes sense. According to this article, how did the universe come into being? Randy? According to the article, how did the universe come into being? Okay, there was an explosion. All right? What we see now was once compressed into this tiny little piece of mass that contained all the energy, all the matter that we see today. All right? Even time and space. According to this article, how was the Earth created? Okay? And just, again, this isn't science class, but we'll just keep going. The mass from the Big Bang cooled and condensed into galaxies, solar systems, and planets. Does that make sense? You guys, we're all together here? All right. We've already been through this slideshow, so we'll fast forward. All right. If we were to think of a continuum, on one end we have creation, on the other hand we have evolution. All right. There are two major other views that we have. One of them is old world creation view. If we talk about what we read in Genesis 6, and if we take that literally, we would call that young earth view or young world view. Old world, how many of you have ever heard of old earth? Okay, can somebody explain it to me just really quick? Okay. Okay, almost. So they believe in creation, just like you said. They believe that it took longer, right? That it took longer than what we see in the young earth view. Okay, it was not a literal 6 days, but that, yes, God did create, and yes, that there was change that took place, but it took longer than 6 days. Okay? Yes, ma'am. As far as whether this is the day-age theory, there are people who hold to that, who would hold to this old earth view, yes. And what I'm about to say is we're looking at four views on the continuum. But if you could, there are as many views as there are people along this continuum, okay? And so I'll get to that here in just a second as well. What is the evolutionary creationism view, or theistic evolution view? They prefer to be called evolutionary creationists, though. Yes? Okay, so God created the universe and everything and used evolution to do so. So maybe he created that little piece of mass and said, go. And everything then evolved over time. Okay? Again, these are the four positions that we are going to limit ourselves to. There are multiple variations on these. Okay? If you were to go creation to evolution on a continuum, you would have creation, young earth, creation, old earth, evolutionary creationism, evolution. Okay? So there's a continuum here. If I have not addressed your particular view, please forgive me. It's not my intention to upset you in any way. We just only have time for certain things. These are the four main ones. So let's look at the first three really quick. Young Earth, Old Earth, evolutionary creationism. I'm going to ask you a very open-ended, simple question. How is it that there are three views of creation when there's only one story? How is it that there are three views of creation when there is only one story? Okay. People approach the same story or the same set of facts with different presuppositions. People approach the same facts with different preconceptions. Okay? We learned that last time. And this is borne out in the fact that you have one passage, Genesis 1, and three views of creation. Okay. So we have creation, young earth. We have creation, old earth. We have evolutionary creationism. We have evolution. And one of those, or maybe none of them, explains then how we got our universe, how we got this earth, how we got us. How in the world do we sift through all this data? How in the world do we determine which view of creation is even correct? How do we determine whether evolution is correct? Okay? One faction will say creationists. They are religious and not scientific. We are scientific. Okay? But is that an accurate analogy? Or are we using incorrect assumptions? Okay, so I want to ask you guys, what is science? Can anybody give me a definition of science? I know you're not a dictionary. The study of the observable universe, okay? I'm going to add to that just a little bit. But systematic knowledge of the physical or material world gained through observation and experimentation. Exactly what you said. Right? The study of the observable universe. What we can touch, what we can see, what we can handle, what we can experiment on. Okay? What is religion? What is religion? Anybody know what religion? Anybody ever been religious? Give me some help here. Emily, what is religion? Okay, your set of beliefs in regard to the world around you, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Let's go with that. A particular system of faith or beliefs and worship. Okay, yes, ma'am. Okay. Okay, So the point has been made that science can be made into a religion because people hold to it so strongly. Okay. I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm not going to agree with that either right now. We're just going to keep going. Okay. What makes the theory of creation a religious idea rather than a scientific one? What makes the theory or one of the theories of creation a religious idea rather than a scientific one? Help me out. Back there. Okay, because you're starting with God. Help me out. How does that make it religious? Okay. So scientists, you would say, don't believe in God. So in order for somebody to believe that there is a God, they have to have what? Starts with an F. Faith. How many of you have ever seen God? How many of you were there at creation and saw God say, let there be light and let there be fish, right? And let there be tarantulas. How many of you saw that? None of us, right? It requires faith that a supreme being no one has ever seen created the universe from nothing in a time frame with which science cannot agree. In other words, it requires faith. Right? We are out of time, but I'm going to leave you with this question, and we will answer this question. We'll pick up here next time. Does the theory of evolution require faith? Does it? This is not a beat-up session on any view or viewpoint. Okay, this is not an aha, we're right, you're wrong. These are legitimate, serious, intellectually honest questions. And I'm not asking you. I'm asking you to be intellectually honest. Okay? Does the theory of evolution require faith? You say, Elias, I'm really interested in this. I would then recommend to you to do what we're about to do when we come back and to read this article one more time that's in your handout. And you tell me, if it doesn't require faith, then it doesn't. And if it does, it does. But let's be intellectually honest. Okay? Based on this conclusion that we come to, will then frame our entire discussion moving forward. Does that make sense? Okay. Questions before we're dismissed. I apologize for being long-winded at the beginning of the lesson, not being able to get through. We'll finish this up next time. Let's pray.